March 9th, 1979, talking to Gladys Dart. This is tape number 2 in Ruby.
Okay.
Did you have a starting point?
Well, we've gotten up to 6 years old. And I think that we should take a leap and we should talk about what it was like for a young teenager.
Oh, could we back up a little bit? Not leap that far ahead?
Okay.
Okay.
When you're ready to leap that far ahead, let me know.
Okay, you got questions. Okay, I'd like to talk a little more about school, particularly since we're thinking about using them for 5th, 6th, 7th grade level, around that level in school, to maybe talk about what your life was like at that age, who your friends were, what the school was like, what you were learning in school.
Okay. First through 8th, I went essentially to a one-room school, even though it wasn't a one-room school building. And consequently, the friends and the friends that I had were limited because there weren't that many children around. Some of the children were bused, so they lived out in the country. And in those days, your access to friends who lived out like that wasn't as frequent because you didn't have the transportation to get there, and it was too far to walk. But it was a good experience for me to be a student in a one-room school. As a teacher in a one-room school, which most of my professional life has been. And when I started school, for example, in the first grade, I had 3 classmates. I also was accelerated a grade in school. And probably the reason they were able to do that were because of the advantages that you have in a one-room school situation. I was probably exposed to much of the learning at an advanced level, even though I wasn't an active student in that grade, simply because you knew what was going on in the other grades as well as your own. So I graduated from the 8th grade when I was 12 years old. And there was a very standard academic class with very little of the extracurricular activities. You know, there were no formal PE classes. There was only the one teacher there to take care of the whole load. Anything that you got in the area of music happened to be because you had a teacher who was interested in it. I had one teacher for 3 years. Otherwise, there was a rather transient population as far as the teachers were concerned.
Where did they usually come from, teachers?
The first grade teacher that I had, first, second, and third, she was from a nearby town, and she had been raised there. She had gone to school in Minnesota, and she lived in Minnesota all of her life. In fact, she's still there today, and she's the teacher that visited me the year I retired. She came up with my mother.
Okay.
to visit Alaska for the first time. Most of the teachers were Minnesotans, and they also received their college training there. Another teacher that I had was a teacher who was the daughter of a farmer who lived about 5 miles from where we lived. In one of the influences in my elementary school years was the fact that there were so few children. We also had to learn how to get along in a more integrated system than you do in a public school nowadays. So you don't have that segregation by age, you don't have that segregation by sex that you so frequently have in larger schools today. And I think it was a good thing that we had the influence of the older ones in our, and as we grew older, also had to be responsible for the younger children. And our activities were integrated as well. I can remember being, when I was in the first grade, being engaged in activities very comfortably with, you know, eighth grade boys and girls. And I was able to apply that as a teacher later on when I was a teacher in a one-room school. This, an excellent opportunity that because of lack of numbers, we have to be concerned for age groups outside of ourselves if we want to have a good time. And also, our activities have to be altered to include those types of activities that will include everybody. And as you're older, just by accident of age, you serve as an example for the younger ones and are responsible to them to that extent. Probably the thing that I miss most by going to that school was the lack of music, because we were a musical family to the extent that we sang a lot together. And we did have one teacher who played piano very well, and we sang, did a lot of singing, and I remember that very fondly. But that's the extent to which any musical talent was developed. And I still feel musically illiterate. We did compete with other schools in sports activities, like I mentioned. So we did have competitions between schools locally, and then district-wide and even statewide, active spelling bee participation. And then we used to have a type of contest that had to do with oratory. And they used to be in different categories, like you learned how to, you chose a piece in a different activity, comedy, or tragedy, or oratory, and you would compete with other schools, and that was one of my favorite types of competition.
What did you usually do in that competition?
Humor.
Humor.
That was my choice, right?
So would you make up?
No, they would have selected pieces that you would choose, and you would memorize these. They were very stereotyped things, but it was probably a 10, 15 minutes duration. You know, it was a lengthy one. and you won in your category, of course. I don't know that they have those these days. I hear of debate classes, but do they? Have you heard of them, Kurt?
Well, just debates.
Festival.
Yeah, I can remember them referring to them as declamatory contests.
Yeah, right. And I think that's pretty much been that part of going to drama classes and the other part would be debates. Mm-hmm. And I know schools compete in debates. So did you ever win one of these contests?
I remember doing it, although, and I also remember losing when you aren't supposed to have any type of crutch, you know. It's, and in this one instance, I used a cookie, you know, and you aren't supposed to have any type of props. You know, nothing. You were supposed to use nothing. And I remember losing on that account. My teacher had given me a cookie to use during part of this one, and of course I wasn't supposed to have had it.
Did you get that at the teacher?
No, I didn't. It was the superintendent of schools was the judge, and she paid me a very special compliment, and then and I wasn't even aware, you know, that it was my parents afterward that told me that there had been a feeling that, and they felt that I should have won. Not my parents, but the judges. But the superintendent of schools came up to me and paid me a very special compliment, and that seemed to exceed the prize.
What were the prizes?
They were just opportunities to go on at more regional and statewide type of competition.
What kind of humor pieces? Would there be like Will Rogers humor pieces?
They were just creative themes. I don't remember being associated with any special type of humor, you know.
But they would give you something to memorize word for word?
Word for word, right.
And then it's just how well you delivered it?
And it, yes, it had all of it had to do with your delivery. And I remember at the time that I had that, the cookie one, I had fallen that day and received a severe cut on the palm of my hand, and that had been quite a traumatic experience to me. And I went to this contest with this huge bandage wrapped around my arm, you know, and it was my left hand, and I'm left-handed, and of course that was the one that I also held the cookie in, you know, so there might have been a little bit of crowd sympathy there too.
Well, what subject did you most enjoy that you had?
Probably the language arts area, although I was also good at math. I liked everything. I really liked everything, with the exception of one class in high school. And that was biology, and it had a lot to do with the teacher. I had a very definite mental block as far as he was concerned. And I don't actually remember, and as a result of that class, then my interest in science generally deteriorated. But I also like to do creative type things in the language arts area. I used to spend time creating stories, although I never wrote them down, but I do remember having collections of my poetry. And I remember doing it, quite a bit of creative writing at the high school level. So when we had assignments in poetry, there was a lot of cheating in that because I wrote a lot of poetry for a lot of the students.
Do you still write poetry?
I haven't for many years. I enjoy other people's poetry now.
What about art, like drawing or painting? Do you do that?
Yes, I was interested in it, but just in a very informal type of situation. My interest in art as an activity, as a pastime for myself, has increased over the years, and particularly at the college level. I've enjoyed at the high school level, I used to do a lot of painting, but it didn't have to do with any courses that I was taking there. I used to do this as an activity at home. And then at the college level, my interest expanded, particularly in sculpture. And I still have quite an interest in that.
That I've seen that's really nice.
Yeah, and also I've given some pieces away and some have broken.
I was asking Chuck, why don't you do more sculpture?
It's just a matter of getting around to it. I was just telling Kurt, I thought that this would be the winter, since I'm here alone, that I would have time to devote to oil painting. But I've discovered that the school schedule has taken up so much of my time that I haven't even opened any of the equipment that I bought here before I, that I bought before I came down. But I plan to do more of that later. But I think sculpture definitely is my favorite medium now. And I do enjoy the soapstone, although I like working with the harder type of soapstone, not the very soft. Although I work more with clay than I have anything, and very little marble. Marble is fascinating, though, to work with. I'd like to do a ptarmigan in marble someday.
Thinking about sculpture, I'm not thinking about questions.
Yeah, have you gotten up to 14? People often say that in a small town or a small school, there are certain limitations, but especially social limitations for kids. Like there's not that many kids to play with, or something like that. Well, that problem probably becomes more acute when people get a little older. Like I'm thinking about 14 or 15, But if you can remember what was social life like for a 14 or 15 year old girl, for you, I mean for you and for other people who might be in the same situation when you were that old.
I don't feel the acuteness so much for the lack of people or the fact that I was raised in a small town, as I felt restricted by the limitations that my family put because of the strictness of the Lutheran background. For example,
just in the area of dance, you know. As far as the home was concerned, there wasn't room for that type of expression, and which I was very much interested in, you know, being active in sports as well. I can remember just about the neatest thing that could have happened at that age was to take tap dancing lessons. You know, which and how that came to be, I don't know, because I didn't know any tap dancers in that time. But, you know, that just seemed, you know, really like a great thing to learn. And there, I know that it would never have been accepted and or not supported by my parents in those days. It was just very strict. There was this feeling that it was explained that dancing it in itself wasn't a sin, but those things associated with dancing were, you know. Well, I suppose just that they probably thought in terms of nightclubbing and, well, they didn't have the fancy nightclubs back in Minnesota in those days. You know, they were saloons. And, you know, that where the dancing occurred were places where
the brothel was
above. Right.
Did you ever have any town dances?
No, not Outumba dances, but where young people, and now this is a strange thing because although my parents objected, and we knew that they did, I mean, they weren't ever very verbal about this, and still we would go to dances. I mentioned that there was this group of Polish people of Polish origin who lived just south of us, and we called it Polish Country. The closest dance hall there was, it was a club, they called it Star Club, where people had dances every week. We did go to dances there, and so we were never actually, there was no demand saying you absolutely cannot go. But there was always this heavy feeling that you were doing it without the support of your parents.
What kind of dance would that be, like polkas and waltzes?
Polkas and waltzes and shottishes and the hambo and mazurka. And, you know, just that traditional folk dance type of thing.
So how old were you when you learned how to do that?
In my teens. And let's see, I graduated from high school when I was 16. I'd say about 14 years old.
How did you feel? Did boys come up and ask you to dance? Or?
Yes, and there with the Polish people, I have a very good feeling about them because there, the old and the young, they dance very much together. And I can remember being asked to dance by Polish grandfathers. And at that age, feeling very flattered, you know, where you might think that for an average teenager, you know, you wouldn't feel that great if a grandfather came up and asked you to dance, you know. But feeling really flattered because they really had reputations for being good dancers. And so we did go to these dances. Our parents knew they were going, but I can remember, and of course we would need the family car to go there, but we always went with older brothers. There was always, whenever you went, there was always a car full that went, you know, because you utilized your transportation to the ultimate. You took anybody who wanted to go. That there was room for.
What kind of musical instruments would people be playing at the dance?
Yeah, it would always be live music, and there accordions and guitars and these small bands, like there are still records out by this orchestra that, or a band that played there. He's called Whoopi John. Did you ever hear of him, Kurt? He used to play every Sunday on a Minnesota station, and he was very popular throughout Minnesota, and he would come there once a year. But the accordion, of course, was probably the most popular instrument for that type of dance.
It seems like right about that age, people make distinctions between good teenagers and bad teenagers. And they're sort of moralistic distinctions. Bad teenagers might break street lights. Good teenagers, I don't know what, I don't, different times in different places, the behaviors are different. But do you recall that as being a kind of distinction that people would make?
No, I don't remember that type of behavior being a problem at all where in our town, because it was so small, I guess, you know. By then, it was pretty much like Hot Springs. But you had your teenagers, older teenagers, who would go out on weekends, and there would be drinking, you know, and you knew that they were underage. There was misbehavior to that extent. As far as delinquent behavior in the village, I don't remember it that much. And when I think back at the behavior in my high school, it was the children were very well self-disciplined. Now when my younger sisters talk about their high school experiences, they were already getting a lot more loose. And this is, you know, less than 10 years later. But the standard, the behavior was not a problem when I was in our high school.
Do you remember any incidents where you got in trouble for doing something?
Yes, and all of it relates to the things that I knew that I shouldn't be doing if I were a good Lutheran. That's probably, it is the source of my rebellion to the church now, because it inhibited so many expressions that I felt I had a right to as an individual. And I can remember I did have my closest friend was belonged to a family who they were not members of the church. They were Christian, but they weren't members of the church. So, and I remember being supported by that family a lot. For example, there was if there was a movie to go to, I would do it without my family's knowledge. If there was a summer where there was a summer theater group that performed in a hall, it was almost like out in the country, you know, it was a township hall. And I can remember them going to it and actually supporting me to the extent that they put me in the back seat of this Model A. It wasn't a back seat even. It was a Model A car that had the back end that you lifted up, like almost like a rumble seat, or like the back end of a modern car. And they would put us, my friend and I, in the back seat, and we would go until we got out of town. So nobody from my family would see me, and I would go to this summer theater group. So I did I did things like that, and I felt very much the black sheep in the family on that account, because I was the girl in the family that did this, and I was doing things that I would never have received my parents' permission to do. Going to the dances is the same thing. But that was more open. That, you know, my parents knew that I was going there, but they probably let us do that because all of us were doing it, you know, the older brothers, the older sisters. And, of course, I was younger, I was the youngest of this group. So if I would have been 4 years older, you know, 17, 18, it wouldn't have been as significant. But when I was 13 and 14, that's a different story. I also, the fact that I had accelerated in grade school, I was the youngest, and I could compete very well academically with everybody at my grade level. Still, because I was the youngest, there were things that I was told I couldn't do because by my parents, because, oh, you're too young to do that. Like, I never held a summer job away from home until after I got out of high school because I was too young to do it, other than babysitting. And I really felt rebellious about that. And I couldn't wait. I just couldn't wait until I could leave home. And I was in the, and to me, the most exciting thing was the biggest city in the world to go to. You know, get away from the small town, you know, and go to the biggest city in the world. And it was just thinking that it was an escape of these small town restrictions, which were just an extension of this restrictions of this of my family background.
How could a person leave home? What alternatives did you have if you wanted to leave?
You mean as a child my age, there wasn't. You didn't have any other. You didn't have an alternative. After you got out of high school, even after I got out of high school, I was only 16. And my older brothers and sisters, jobs were very difficult to find. But my oldest brothers had found jobs, and my oldest sister, on the East Coast. Because there were members, there were relatives there, and they found jobs in factories. And to me, that was the thing for me was to go to a city to find a job. The thing was to leave Altamba, which everybody had to do to find a job.
What would happen if someone wanted to stay in Altamba? Would they be considered a failure or slow or something?
No. Well, it would depend upon what reason you were there for. My oldest brother went to college for a year, and then my father had to take an extended trip, and he came home and took over the duties of my father so he could travel. But these were also the days of the Depression, you know, where it was, in order to go to college, my father wasn't able to afford that, so my brother had to work and then go to school. And this is what he did for 1 year, and then he came home and took over the jobs at home that my father had so he could travel.
Um,
I don't remember anybody making that kind of a judgment, you know, because there were farmers that encouraged their oldest sons to stay home rather than go, because it meant that they would have the farm when they would be too old to work at the parents. But there was also a general feeling among the young to just go, you know. And then by the time I got out of high school, which was 41, you know, those were the war years. And then it wasn't a case of going, you know, you were being drafted, all boys were being drafted all around us.
Do you remember the first date you went out on? Do people do that?
Yes. I remember it was when I was in high school, and it was to a dance. But more than dating, you went out in groups. There were like the dances, and this I'm sure had a lot to do with the lack of transportation. If somebody had a car, you rarely saw couples go. If it was a group of couples, and this is the way. I don't remember a date where I went with a boy alone. It was usually at least two couples or three. And there again, the lack of transportation. Because there weren't any social activities in Outamba itself. Even to go to a movie, you went 20 miles. 20 miles is some distance in those days. And any type of, in the summertime, all of the activities like going to baseball games or swimming or any type of that thing, everybody just went in pairs, you know, and I mean in whole gangs, you know.
Riding a bus 25 miles,
mm-hmm.
That was up until the time you graduated?
Right, all through high school.
After you finished high school, what did you do?
Well, I stayed home for a fraction of that first year because we had, you know, the store with all of its branches, and I graduated in 41. I had, my oldest brother was drafted. I had two other brothers that were waiting to be drafted. And my two older sisters, I was the oldest one at home. I had to stay home and help for a time after graduation from high school. But I was just biding time and for that year. And I was home in that December because I was home when Pearl Harbor was attacked. But then that January, I went to Massachusetts. And I worked there. And then I worked there for almost a year, and I received a letter from my father. And of course, he hadn't been able to leave home because there wasn't anybody to take care of the store and the post office. And I was. Again, it was easier for me to leave than anybody because they all had better jobs than I did because they had been working longer. And I got the letter from my father and asked me if I wouldn't please come home and take care of the store and the post office and the depot while he went out on this 3-month trip. And so I consented to do that and handled it all by myself and with my mother's help. But she was mostly at home. She just would relieve me at times. And then after that, after he came back, then I decided, with my experience on the West Coast, I didn't really care for those large cities, and I didn't want to go back east again.
On the West Coast, when did you get to the West Coast?
Then I decided to go to the West Coast. Oh. And I had an aunt and uncle who went there, and I had an uncle who had already been there. And that's when I went to work, and I went to work in a war plant for Boeing, working as on the B-17s and the B-29s as a riveter. And then
what was your first job before you lose it, Charlie? What was your first job on the East Coast?
I was I worked as a clerk in a laundry, and I absolutely hated that work. And then I worked in a fraternity house. And of course, that was just during the school year. And there was the chef, and he sort of had control over the whole house. And then there was another girl and myself, and we helped him. And it was just helping in the kitchen and general work in the keeping the house clean.
How is that working?
I really enjoyed that job just because that old fellow was so neat. And, of course, you had the college boys to contend with, but overall they were quite friendly and helpful.
What was it about the laundry clerk job that you disliked so much?
Well, you're standing behind that counter, you know, and you're accepting laundry and giving it back, and everybody checks. You have there were a lot of gripes about it. And I hated a situation where I had to listen to people saying unkind things about the business that I had no control over. You know, somebody else did the cleaning. All I did was handle it coming in and coming out. But when the cleaning job was not a good one, I was the one that heard about it. And I didn't care for that kind of a situation. So I was really glad to leave that job. In fact, I quit it. I quit it when this opportunity came up to work in this fraternity house instead.
Were there very many women, either young or older, working at that time when you were on the East Coast?
My association with that laundry, there were only two other girls. It was a chain of stores. And there were two other girls that worked in that store beside myself, and they were both young. And in the fraternity house, the other girl was young. You mean generally speaking?
Yeah, generally. Like, did you feel that as a young woman that you were doing something that not many women did?
That
you felt different by being out working and earning money?
No, because even working in the war plant, although you were doing a job that wasn't a woman's job, every other woman was doing it too, including older women. You know, there were older women who were welders and riveters and machinists, and so you were exposed in a way to a woman doing an equal type job more so than you would at any other period. It was just the times that made it so, because we were at war.
Did you enjoy working at that time?
Yes, I enjoyed it simply because the wide variety of people that you had a chance to meet and to know quite well. Although when we received word, I worked there for 2 years, and then when we received word that my brother was killed in France,